Hello, everybody. Welcome to God Chat. This is our weekly Bible study where we are now studying the book of Genesis. We're looking for the picture of God and what we can learn about God in chapters 11 through 20 of Genesis. So one of the main things that these chapters deal with, first of all, is the story of the Tower of Babel, and then the story of Abraham, or Abram, as he was first called, when God called him out of the land of Ur. And then God dealing with him up to the point when he comes down to talk to Abraham and then goes to the city of Sodom and Gomorrah and says to Abraham, you know, I'm going to go there and see if the reports have been given about the city, the cities, are true. And then Abraham has a discourse with God about, he has a phrase that in the King James says, shall the judge of all the earth not do what is right? Would you have the guts to say that to God? You know? So we should look at that and see, was he disrespectful or was he not? So this is something that I think we should spend some time looking at. So anything that you guys found interesting in the first few chapters there, starting at chapter 11?
It's interesting, you know, it starts with the Tower of Babel. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I've read earlier people talk about that the Tower of Babel symbolized people's, even though God promised never again to flood the earth, people brought upon themselves, they wanted to show that they, by themselves, could be protected mm-hmm. from a similar disaster. So mm-hmm. they decided they were going to build the Tower of Babel.
Mm-hmm. So, what did they say in verse 4? That what's their intent, according to them themselves? Anybody wants to read verse 4?
For ourselves, a city and a tower. And let's make the top of the tower reach high into the sky. We will become famous. If we do this, we will not be scattered over all the earth.
So it is interesting that, you know, I've heard this before about them fearing another flood.
Mm-hmm.
But according to at least verse 4 here, it says that we want to make a name for ourselves. We want to be famous, and we don't want to be scattered.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like they're saying, you know, we're pretty good,
mm-hmm.
and we're going to show the world how good we are by building this really huge tower.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, this is so interesting because in masonry,
mm-hmm.
this is a very, very deep symbol within masonry, because they feel like that incomplete job is their job. Like, in the highest degrees of masonry, the more spiritual masonry gets, the more the symbolism of this Tower of Babel starts.
Hmm.
Another very interesting thing that in the United, in the European Union, the building, the architecture of the building itself there, is a very striking resemblance to one of the pictures of the Tower of Babel.
Hmm.
Like, even incomplete as it is, and it looks like the building is incomplete.
Okay, see you later, Max.
So, very interesting. You know, so in my mind, I find a lot of parallels if we go and look at what Masons believe in terms of, you know, we want to reach up to heaven and we want to make a name for ourselves and we are a race that is above every race and nobody else that is not initiated shouldn't belong, you know, and like all that, even like Hitler's type of mindset, you know, I'm the chosen race, everybody else should die. So it's another approach to that story, but that's very interesting.
Well, certainly that was part of it, for them to build a, well, not just a tower, but a great city for themselves. And it's interesting that God, you know, at this point says that they can do almost anything if they if he doesn't intervene at this point, which is where he starts to confuse the languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I thought it was interesting that they used tar for mortar. I don't know of any buildings that they use tar as a mortar.
Huh.
Yeah.
Very interesting. I don't know anything about construction, so I'll trust you in terms of that. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's very interesting about what the Lord decided to do.
Like on from 5 through 7.
Yeah.
When he comes down.
Yeah.
To make a decision to confuse the languages.
Why did he confuse the language of these people here? But then later decided to wipe out the whole cities. Have you guys ever thought about that?
I'm just trying to understand. It says this is the only beginning of what they will do. They will be able to do anything they want.
That's a big part of it too.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's interesting that, you know, instead of coming and destroying them, just make a slight tweak, you know, to their language, and suddenly they automatically separate.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they find somebody that speaks the same language and
group up.
Yeah.
So instead of driving them out of the city,
because
then, you know, they'd want to keep trying probably. But this definitely put an end to that.
Yeah. And perhaps this sin or this intent is not as grave in the mind of God, too, to warrant something so drastic like Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's interesting. Anything else in chapter 11? I know they have a big genealogy. And it's basically the genealogy of Abraham. Verse 31, as it's closing, actually verse 29. And Abraham and Nahor took wives for themselves. Abraham and Nahor were brothers. The name of Abraham's wife was Sarai. The name of Nahor's wife was Milcah. She was the daughter of Haran, the father of both Milcah and Iscah. And then verse 31, so Terah, who was the father of Abraham, took his son Abraham, his grandson Lot, his daughter-in-law Sarai, and with them he set out from Ur to go to Canaan. Interesting here that, at least in this record, it just says that they set out to Canaan. It doesn't say that God... It doesn't say that God led them there.
Right, right.
But another thing that we talked about last week, this is kind of the overview. And then the next chapter kind of expands on that story. So that's exactly what we're going to see, that expansion.
Yeah, because God doesn't start talking to Abram until chapter 12.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't really talk to him, say that he's talked to him before that point.
So let's look at chapter 12. So, what is this promise that God is making here to Abraham? Verses 1 through 3. Anybody want to read that?
I can read it. The Lord had said to Abram, "Leave your native country, your relatives, and your father's family, and go to the land that I will show you. I will make you into a great nation. I will bless you and make you famous, and you will be a blessing to others. I bless those who bless you and curse those who treat you with contempt. All the families on earth will be blessed through you."
Interesting here that verse 2 uses the same words that those people from the Tower of Babel used.
Mm-hmm.
But this time is God saying, "I will make your name famous."
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Another way that we're seeing that it's God, you know, that has the right to do that for us. It's not of ourselves, it's not our labor, you know, that will give us a great name. Anything else within these nine verses here that talk about his move to Canaan? You know, he says in verse 7, "To your descendants I'll give this land." And then Abraham built an altar there to the Lord. who had appeared to him. So, you know, last week we started to see that Cain's sacrifice was not acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And Abel's sacrifice was acceptable. It was a lamb that he sacrificed. Same thing here. Abraham is offering a sacrifice. Noah offered a sacrifice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It feels, you know, and this is the way that the Bible interprets that this is the only way that the sacrifice should be done.
Mm-hmm.
It's a death of an animal that should represent something in the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's how they decide to honor God. Now, God didn't say to them something that was completely foreign to their mind, if you think about it. Because people, even before Noah's time, I think, were already sacrificing animals to gods. Same thing in Abraham's time. You know, this is common in any religion of that time, sacrificing animals and all that. And then religions go too far, and like they have sacrificing your infant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so blood is part of these religions. God didn't say to them, you know, if you want to become religious, you got to be 100% different than the world out there.
Mm-hmm.
You got to do some things that are similar, but with the right focus.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and it kind of makes sense if God established this with Cain and Abel, you know, about the sacrifice, it probably spread to other people.
Right.
I mean, just the whole concept would continue to spread. Just people would, like they do continue now, pervert what was originally happening.
Right.
They they changed it. They did the same thing, but a different meaning.
Yeah.
And so, exactly. It doesn't mean that the original wasn't wrong. It just changed it.
Yeah, they changed the meaning to, say, appease a god. Mm-hmm. And then when they did that for the god Moloch, when, you know, in the middle of the Bible, you see Moloch is talked about all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Moloch was a hollow god that had a hand sticking out, and they would heat up his hands like extremely hot, and they would offer an infant on his hands.
Okay.
So they get to that point.
Mm-hmm.
And the worst part is that Israel does that, starts doing that. And God says, it didn't even cross my mind that Israel would even do that.
Mm-hmm.
Later, we'll see that later in the Bible, which is incredible that they start veering off to that other direction.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
So, anything else in 12 here?
The king was kind to Abram because he thought Abram was Sarai's brother.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, he gave Abram sheep, cattle, donkeys, also was given servants and camels.
Mm-hmm. And then what happened next?
Disease.
Yeah.
But the Lord sent terrible diseases on the king and all the people in his house.
Interesting that the Bible starts appropriating everything that happens to a person, to God.
Mm-hmm.
And you see this very strongly in the Old Testament. When Saul takes his life, the king Saul, later we'll see in Kings, it says in Kings that God, no, I think it's in Chronicles, one of the two, God's loose Saul. But the story is very, very clear that Saul took his own life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bible says, well, thus God slew Saul.
Mm-hmm.
Like, everything that happened was attributed to God, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't matter what it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when Jesus came and we read in John, he said, no. You know, something happened here. Like, who sinned so this man was born blind? Was it his, you know, like a punishment from God?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus said, neither this man nor his parents.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it wasn't a punishment from God, is what Jesus was trying to say.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in the Old Testament, we see this over and over again. God takes the blame for everything, doesn't matter what it is,
mm-hmm.
good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
It's his responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's the conception of the Jews. In the Jewish mind, in those ancient cultures, because God is all-powerful, he's in control of everything, good or bad.
Mm-hmm.
So they deliberately say, God brought disease. You know, but once we understand that, that's a way of writing and a way of understanding. But then we see different things, like, you know, the book of Job is entirely something that people think it's God bringing down disease and killing Job's family and everything. But yet in the first chapter of Job, it says the Satan came up to God, and then God said, do anything you want with him, just don't take his life. But yet in the earth, nobody knows. We know because we're reading the story, but Job and his family and the people around him don't know. You see? So again, it's part of the understanding of ancient cultures that everything is attributed to God, good or bad.
Well, in this case, Pharaoh and his household becoming sick with something, you know, and they do attribute that to God causing that. And that wouldn't be something that would just happen randomly and then they would blame it on Abram.
Yeah, so, I mean, it does happen. You know, it could very well be God, and I'm not denying that it is. I'm just saying that we shouldn't take this as a rule 100% of the time. Because we'll see that in certain situations it is attributed to God, but yet...
Well, in the two times when it talks about Abraham saying his wife is his sister...
Because it happens twice, doesn't it?
Yeah. Within this reading, and as, you know, the second time, God actually talks to the person and says, the reason why your kid, everybody's sterile right now is because of...
Yeah, because you're committing a sin or about to commit a great sin.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, God's very clear that he did it in that case.
Yeah. So why did he say, she's my sister?
Fear.
Because he was afraid that they would just take Sarai and then kill him. And, I mean, ultimately it seems like God... Well, ultimately it seems like Abraham didn't trust God on some level. Or he was thinking more in terms of, I guess, human understanding, human...
Trying to fix the situation by himself. Was he lying?
It was a half lie. Which...
It wasn't quite a lie, because she was his sister.
Did he actually say, or did they assume?
He didn't say until later.
Yeah. He did say, but it was later.
Yeah, it was later. So before, he'd said, she's my sister. So it's very interesting that even though it is partly true, it's still a lie. And there's still a problem. You know what I mean? So sometimes we think, well, it's okay in the situation. But here we see that even a part of a lie is not right.
Yeah, because it had definite, I mean, even though it's a part of a lie, it would definitely have, I mean, because Pharaoh was going to take her as his wife, you know, as a wife. So, I mean, it was going to have big consequences.
Yeah. All right, let's try and keep going. I think we have 25 minutes, so I just want to make sure.
Do you think that's Satan's way of trying to break up God's plan? Because twice they take Sarah away from Abraham to make her somebody else's wife. And if so, she's out of the equation, then it's real hard for Abraham to...
To have,
the kid.
That is a very interesting thing,
Yeah?
That's I hadn't thought about that, but yeah, that could be. Now, of course, you know, does it say why he went to Egypt? Well, it's famine, so, you know, is it famine both times? One time, you know, he has to go to this place because of famine. The other time, he has to set up temporary residence, maybe because of famine or war, because they just had fought all those other kings. You know, but again, both times he comes into a new land and he doesn't know what to do. And instead of trusting God, he tries to fix it on his own. In chapter 13, it's talking about...
Just before you get into that.
Yeah, go ahead.
Pharaoh and this other guy asks the same question. What have you done to us?
Yeah,
that's true.
Because, you know, I think it was a very serious thing even in those cultures that might not necessarily be God-fearing cultures. Mm-hmm. You know, Egypt having tons and tons of other gods. And, you know, it was very interesting that they even have a morality issue with marrying somebody else's wife.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know? And we look at adultery nowadays and how people don't really care.
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that incredible? Like, people that are heathen here considered, like, having so many other gods and not fearing the God of the Bible are very afraid of adultery.
Yes. Yeah.
And here, you know, in today's society, it's like, doesn't matter.
Right. Yeah, I think, you know, back then, I think marriage was more important, and particularly for children, too.
Right.
I think now, for different reasons, I mean, it's just, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, exactly, have different standards towards a lot of those things.
So, chapter 13 is part of the discussion that Lot has with his uncle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they both are very rich, and they have a lot of cattle and a lot of servants and a lot of people. And then they got to split because, people are quarreling and they're not getting along. And so what do you think about Lot? You know, Abraham gives him a choice. Verse 9, is not the whole land before you? Separate yourself from me. If you go to the left, then I'll go to the right. If you go to the right, then I'll go to the left. What do you think of Lot's choice?
Well, it says Lot chose for himself, you know, the whole, which, you know, I've heard that was his first problem, is he didn't ask God or think about God. He just looked at what it looked like, and he just decided, well, I'm just going to go there.
Mm-hmm. And interesting, too, that... you know, in those cultures, respect for the elderly was very great.
Yes.
And here's his uncle giving him a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, okay, you give me a choice, then I'll make a choice.
Yeah.
And I'll get the better land.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Interesting that he didn't say to his uncle, no, you should take the honor of choosing. You know, mm-hmm. thank you for the nice thing you're doing to me, but I'm going to return the favor or something.
Yeah.
Seems like a greedy choice.
Yeah.
And how did it turn out for him?
Yeah, it didn't turn out very well. That's for sure.
So anything else that is interesting here? I think there's better things to talk about in the next few chapters, but if you guys want to mention anything in here.
So at 14, Lot's captured, and then Abram rescues him.
Mm-hmm. Now, who were they fighting? There's all these people, like verse 5, or actually starts at verse 1.
Whole bunch.
King of Shinar, King of Elasar, King of Elam, King of Nations. Title, King of Nations? It doesn't say what nations they are.
Title, King of G-O-I-I-M is what mine is.
Goim? Oh, really? Is that what it says there? Interesting.
All these kings went to war against several other kings.
Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah, because they rebelled against King...
Yeah. They had a war against the king of Sodom, the king of Gomorrah, the king of Adam, Adma, Zeboim. So who was Lot captured by? Which group?
People of Sodom and Gomorrah.
Gomorrah. Oh, yeah, they captured. Yeah.
What's the verse?
See, 11. I think.
The four victorious kings took all the possessions of and food of Sodom and Gomorrah and left. They also took Abram's nephew. So it's obviously, you know, the kings that fought against the kings of Sodom and Gomorrah that won the battle, took Lot, took all his possessions and everything. And here comes Abram to try and rescue Lot.
I thought it was interesting that he had 318 trained men in his household. He had a big household.
I know. Yeah. I know. That's why they split. You know, they're so huge. And
mine says camp.
Camp.
In his camp?
His camp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is the same thing, because they lived in clans, you know, and they grouped themselves within this clan, and so this camp or clan would be considered a household.
Yep.
Yeah.
So here goes Abram, and he fights those kings, and then he gets the stolen property, he gets back his nephew Lot, his possessions, all the women, the rest of the people. And then what happens in verse 18?
Oh, yes.
Somebody want to go all the way to 20, verse 21. Or actually, verse 20.
Okay.
18 through 20.
Melchizedek, the king of Salem, and a priest of God Most High, brought Abram some bread and wine. Melchizedek blessed Abram with this blessing. Blessed be Abram by God Most High, creator of heaven and earth. And blessed be God Most High, who has defeated your enemies for you. You know, then Abram gave Melchizedek a tenth of all the goods he had recovered.
Who is this king of Salem? In the New Testament, in Hebrews, the book of Hebrews, the writer there, who many people consider conservative scholars consider it to be Paul, who wrote Hebrews, it says that Jesus is a priest in the order of Melchizedek, because obviously Jesus was born in the tribe of Judah, and later we'll see that the tribe of Levi was the tribe of priests. So Jesus, because he was born as a king of Judah, or in the tribe of Judah, cannot be a priest in the old order. So then the author of Hebrew makes a parallel to Jesus is actually way, way back here in talking to Abraham. He's a priest in the order of Melchizedek. And then he says, because he was a king that had no beginning, no end, because in the context of this story, there is no genealogy. It doesn't say where the king came from, who he was. He just shows up. Say what?
Never says he died either.
Never says he died. Interesting, huh? In the commentary that I have here from the New English Translation, it says, though some have identified him with the pre-incarnate Christ, or with Noah's son Shem, it's far more likely that Melchizedek was a Canaanite royal priest whom God used to renew the promise of the blessing to Abraham. Perhaps because Abram considered Melchizedek his spiritual superior. But Melchizedek remains an enigma. In the book, filled with genealogical records, he appears on the scene without a genealogy, then disappears from the narrative. In Psalm 110, the Lord declares that the Davidic king is a royal priest after the pattern of Melchizedek.
Yeah.
Interesting, too, that in the Psalms, the kings of Israel are considered priests. You know, the kings were, you know, the tribe of Judah and the tribe of David, because, you know, the tribe of Saul got rejected. Benjamin, I think, was his tribe, because Saul, you know, disrespected the Lord, remember? And then David came into his throne, and then God said, any king of Israel now will be from your line. or king of Judah in this case, when they split. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody was from the tribe of Judah. But then they were considered priests by the order of Melchizedek, which was interesting. So, what do you think of this giving him a tenth of everything? What is this everything?
All the spoils of what he captured.
A lot of people try and get the tithe doctrine to say, you know, it precedes the law.
Mm-hmm.
But then if we look at it, well, he actually tithed the spoils of war. Mm-hmm. It wasn't his own money
mm-hmm.
by any means.
Yeah.
You know? But yet, he doesn't even say that. He gives Melchizedek a tenth of everything, and then what does he do?
Gives all the rest back to the people that it belonged to.
In verse 22 and 23, right? Because then Sodom says, give me the people, take the possessions for yourself. And then Abram says, I raise my hand to the Lord, the Most High God, creator of heaven and earth, and vow that I will take nothing belonging to you, not even a thread or the strap of a sandal.
Mm-hmm.
So he gives it all back.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He doesn't get anything for himself.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just goes there to rescue his son
yeah.
or his nephew.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. When I did Bible studies, they specifically pointed to this tithe, this beginning, as this Melchizedek.
A lot of people do. You know, but then if you look at the entire context, it's like we're stretching it a little too far. I think there's plenty of other reasons to think of giving money to God.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the New Testament says, give freely
mm-hmm.
out of the goodness of your heart.
Mm-hmm.
And like the way they gave everything they had
mm-hmm.
to the building up of the church
mm-hmm.
is even miles and miles and miles better than tithing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it's, if I was so bold to say in the recording and with to you guys here, it's an attempt of the Christian church to have at least a bare minimum that is given back to the church, because they might consider people to be greedy.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And in my mind, it's like, if you are a God's children, what you want to do is give back.
Mm-hmm.
You know? If you're truly converted, you would want to help your church. You know? You would want to give money, and
mm-hmm.
I don't know if we need that control. So that's just my opinion, my personal opinion. It's not, you know, anybody's doctrine. It's Marcelo's thoughts, that I feel like if we didn't impose something like that, that people might consider, well, actually, I should actually give even more
mm-hmm.
of my money.
Oh, you know, I see what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of take it all for myself, greed even more, mm-hmm. and just give 10% and be done with it.
Yeah.
I'll just, out of the goodness of my heart, I'll give you even more.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a commitment between us and God, and it's a covenant that we make with Him, and it's like Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
He decided to do that. Nobody asked him to do it.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I will give 10%.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
And I think there is some, just because we do have tithes, but we also have offerings. And offerings is never given as a specific percentage.
Right.
And it may be just because people being greedy, if we didn't have a tithe,
wouldn't
give anything.
Yeah. Right.
So, and I know early on, I was reading that church history, I mean, originally I don't think they had tithe.
Yeah.
And people gave very little. So,
yeah.
You know.
So it is a way to control at least some money for the building of the church.
Of the church, yeah. But,
yeah. But it's interesting here that the context
right.
is totally different right. than tithe as it is explained today.
Mm-hmm. The other thing I thought was interesting is that Abram, you know, he goes out with trained warriors to fight and bring back Lot. And this is before God, you know, before those wars where, but it also talks about that God, where was it, that God had defeated his enemies. But it's, you know, I've heard, you know, I don't know, it's just interesting that Abram had to do a part. He had to actually go by and fight them to rescue Lot, which is, I don't know. is kind of, for me, is kind of interesting. I think that God does require us to do something sometimes.
Yeah. Well, we don't. Do we hear anything saying, "Well done, Abram," type of a thing? You know.
Other than that, it says that God had defeated his enemies. So,
mm-hmm.
Where's that? What verse is that in?
That is in. Where is it? Let's see.
20.
Yeah, 20. Who is? Yeah, blessed be God Most High has defeated your enemies for you.
Mm-hmm. Delivered your enemies into your hands. Mm-hmm. So, you know,
probably if you think 4 Kings or 5 Kings. They probably had more than 318
warriors. I would bet so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You know, so he...
Yeah, I think so. I think there would probably be a lot more people fighting against 318.
Yeah.
And it was obviously a miraculous thing that God did to give him.
Mm-hmm.
To give him them into their hand. And he does that all the time, God does. You know,
oh, yeah.
I don't see anywhere in here where it says go out and fight.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, in the fighting, God delivers. You know, it's almost like we look at the way God is condescending to the human race. Starting here, starting even, you know, before then, and trying to deal with them in their context.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so if you're going to fight, let me help you at least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God says later to the Israelites, you know, I'll send the hornet ahead of you.
Mm-hmm.
I will do all these things. I'll smite your enemies.
Mm-hmm.
But then they say, well, I'll take up the sword and do it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost God saying, well, if you're deciding to actually go out and fight,
mm-hmm.
let me go help you. Mm-hmm. Don't do it alone, because when you do it alone, you're going to lose. And that's exactly what happened in the history of the Jewish nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I like the reason why Abram doesn't take any of the stuff is it cuts down on somebody being able to say, hey, we made him rich.
Mm-hmm.
Because really, the one that made him rich was God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
you can keep giving God the glory for what he has instead of spoils of war.
Mm-hmm. Wow, our time is like, we're supposed to wrap. We're starting too late, these Bible studies. We need to get people here a little sooner. But we have these stories here. The Covenant, chapter 15.
Mm-hmm.
And then the birth of Ishmael. And then the other covenant, or, you know, the covenant as promised.
Mm-hmm.
What Abraham did, or Abram did,
mm-hmm.
to speed up the covenant,
yeah.
if you will. And then what God actually does and talks to him about, and then the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah. So, what interesting things you find from these chapters that you want to spend some time on?
I guess just really quick, that, you know, like you said, I find it interesting that God tries to help, or Abraham tries to help out God by, you know, having a child through Hagar, you know, which obviously turns out bad. And
mm-hmm.
we know later on, I mean, that they're still fighting between, I mean, right now, this day, there's fighting between the sons of
Hagar
and sons of Sarah. I mean, they're both from Abram,
yeah.
Abram or Abraham, but they're still fighting right now, you
yeah.
know, to this day, they're fighting,
mm-hmm.
you know, constantly.
It's very sad.
And I know, you know, the Muslims date back to Hagar, and they actually changed the Bible to say that Hagar is the, and Ishmael is actually the favored one. You know, if you look, as I understand the Quran, so they totally change it. So
interesting that, you know, like we could get into the discussion, well, who's telling the truth then?
Mm-hmm.
Is it the sons of Ishmael or the sons of Abraham?
Mm-hmm.
If they're both claiming to be the chosen race,
mm-hmm.
and the other one is the unfavored race,
mm-hmm.
you know, who are you going to believe?
Mm-hmm.
And I have to almost look at, and it's not a discussion for tonight because it's impossible to make that decision. Like,
right.
why should we consider the Bible the holy book and not the Quran?
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's definitely something that's worth looking at some point in our lives, mm-hmm. so that we have the assurance that the book we're holding in our hands mm-hmm. is the inspired book versus yeah. another.
Well, and that's the beautiful thing about Christianity, and that's what I understand in Adventism, too, is that, you know, everything started with Abraham, or the Bible, and continued through. I mean, Christianity, some often, and me originally, had been this split with Jesus Christ as a totally new beginning, but actually it was a continuation of God's plan through Israel, you know. Mm-hmm. And so, for me, that's what makes this, you know, that's why I can believe the Bible instead of the Quran and the other different mm-hmm. books.
We obviously,
right.
studying the Bible, believe that it is the holy book versus the Quran. Now, you know, for people listening to us online, I believe it's important for us to do an addendum study at some point, either yourself or either us here, so that we have the full assurance that, you know, when we look at other holy books from other religions, you know, how can we have the full assurance that what we're holding in our hands is the true book? I think it's every duty of every Christian to do that for their lives, for on their own. Okay, so the covenant that God makes is very interesting here, because the Lord doesn't tell Abraham to do anything. The entire chapter in the covenant, there is nothing that Abraham's supposed to do. Mm-hmm. Like, God doesn't say you should obey, you should... nothing. God just says, I'm going to be generous to you, and I'm going to make you a covenant and make you the father of a great nation. Or am I wrong?
Well, except for this, he does require the circumcision as the...
Yeah, but that comes after.
After.
The
yes.
promise.
Right.
And that's the very point that Paul makes in Galatians.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That says that the law came after the mm-hmm. promise.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the circumcision came after the promise.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was trying to make the point that the promise is preeminent,
mm-hmm.
it comes first, and then the circumcision,
mm-hmm.
the law, the ceremony,
mm-hmm.
is a sign.
Right.
He uses those
that.
Exact words.
Mm-hmm.
And God does here too, later on. In chapter 18, is it? Or 17.
It's, 17
and then it's chapter... So here is where God says, chapter 17. Then God said to Abraham, as for you, you must keep the covenantal requirement I am imposing on you and your descendants throughout their generations.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so God makes the promise, you'll be the father of a great nation, I'm going to bless you, you're gonna, you know, nobody is gonna be able to count how many people you're gonna have in your family,
mm-hmm.
in your seed. And then all of a sudden, God says, now
mm-hmm.
there are things that mm-hmm. I want you to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with salvation.
Mm-hmm.
We're saved by what God did.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing that humans can contribute. But then God says, now that you live in this new life, you're supposed to live a certain way.
Mm-hmm.
You see? It never is first. And that's what the Jews did in later. They twisted.
Mm-hmm.
They were like, well, in order for you to become a child of God, you need to be circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
And then Paul is saying, no, look back at the promise to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
The promise came first, and then circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
You see? Very interesting to see that they didn't get the point at all.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Jews. Kind of gross that, you know, he's circumcised at 99 years old. Right? That's
yeah.
when he was circumcised, right? Ishmael was circumcised when he was 13.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then here's the thing about 8 days old, you're supposed to be circumcised.
Mm-hmm.
And just to paint the picture of how screwed up Jewish thought became, they said that
if circumcision fell on the Sabbath, mm-hmm. and they had a rule that they made on the Sabbath, you can't use a knife,
mm-hmm.
so you can't perform circumcision.
Mm-hmm.
But then they say because that circumcision came first, therefore that supersedes the Sabbath law,
mm-hmm.
and then you can circumcise.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like they add these laws upon laws upon laws upon laws, and then God says, you know, you make burdens that are way too heavy for people to bear,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know, that you yourselves don't bear.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're telling people you can't do this on the Sabbath, but you yourself say, well, I can because the law says that I can. Like,
mm-hmm.
they find all these loopholes.
Oh, okay.
I heard a story about, and I don't want to digress, so let's move on. Anything else? You know, it's funny that we see we skipped chapter 16. But, you know, Abram goes, in the Bible, in the King James, it says, he goes into her. It's very graphic,
yeah.
the way it describes, very literal. But that's the way they spoke back then, I guess, and that's the way they decided to translate it. But here in mine, New English, it says they had sexual relations, but...
Mm-hmm.
So Ishmael is born, and then Sarah gets jealous, throws her out,
mm-hmm.
or even before he's born, when she's still pregnant,
yeah.
she throws her out.
Mm-hmm.
And then God says, no, you know, I'm going to protect you. And then he tells, does he tell Abram, or does he just talk to Hagar? I think in chapter 16 he only talks to Hagar.
Mm-hmm.
Return to your mistress and submit to her authority. In verse 9. Okay, so circumcision is chapter 17. Anything else you want to talk about there, or should we go to 18?
That's fine, we get to you.
There's three people that come to talk to him. You know, basically it says the Lord appeared to Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
And then Abraham looked up and here he sees three people. It doesn't say if that's Father, Son, Holy Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
It just says it's three people, but it says that the Lord came.
Mm-hmm.
You know, God was present there. He was making himself appear human, perhaps, because they didn't necessarily feel like it was a heavenly figure. You know, there
mm-hmm.
was no description of, oh my gosh, I'm having, you know, like they realized they were sacred men
mm-hmm.
from God,
mm-hmm.
but there was nothing apparently in their appearance that made them believe that, you know, they're supernatural. I think it was more like their faith that made them believe that
mm-hmm.
because of the way they talked to Abraham and Sarah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's funny that they came up, and then verse 3, that's Abraham lows down to the ground in verse 2 and then says, my Lord, if I have found favor in your sight, don't pass by and leave your servant. And then stay here, rest under this tree, let me bring you a bit of food. So there's this hospitality situation that is very intriguing to me because God, again, condescends to their level.
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine God eating one of his own creatures?
Yeah.
Because that's what they brought. They brought the food that's, you know, the animal that they killed.
Right.
And here's God, you know, swallowing up one of his creatures that he made, one animal
mm-hmm.
that he had allowed people to eat. You know, in Noah, we didn't talk about this last week, but he allowed them to eat meat
mm-hmm.
after the flood. And here God just doesn't say anything, just accepts the food. Because the point is, I don't want to hint anything between me and you. In terms of conversation, I don't want to hinder that conversation that I want to have with you. Same thing that happened with Jesus
and his disciples on the beach after he was resurrected. Mm-hmm. He made breakfast for them, and he ate with them. And what did he eat?
Ate the fish.
Ate fish and ate the bread. Just, it was a normal breakfast for them. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want food to get in the way of me trying to teach you a lesson.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
A very important point.
Right. Yeah. It's interesting. I've heard one pastor say that Jesus, being a Jew, he would have eaten lamb at Passover.
Uh-huh.
Which is kind of interesting. I remember the whole congregation, there's shock over that. But
yeah, I mean, well, it's no secret that Jesus ate meat.
Right, right.
You know? He just acted like anybody else. He didn't want those things to become a hindrance to them believing. Not only he did that, he was circumcised on the eighth day, just like Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
He waited until he was 30 to begin his ministry, because that is the acceptable adult age for a teacher, you know, for a rabbi.
Mm-hmm.
So he did everything according to their law in order for them to accept his word and not have that be a hindrance to him.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing I see here. It's God condescending down to our level to teach us something.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very intriguing. A very gracious thing for God. You know, Sarah laughs. She's like, oh, I'm too old. You know, and then it's interesting that somebody read chapter or verse 13 through 15.
Then the Lord said to Abraham, why has Sarah laughed and said, will I really have a child when I am old? Is anything too hard for the Lord? I will return to you at the point of time next year, and Sarah will have a son. Sarah was afraid, so she lied and said, I did not laugh. But he said, yes, you did laugh.
And he leaves it at that. Doesn't rebuke her.
No.
She's just, he's probably thinking, I don't know, I don't want to put thoughts in God's mind. Oh my God, that would be a terrible thing for me to do. But I would say that maybe Sarah was laughing because, well, she thought, that is crazy. I mean, in the human perspective, I can't have children. And then God says, well, nothing is impossible with God. And then she says, I didn't lie. And he's like, well, yes, you did. I know you did.
Yeah.
And then it's almost like God is trying to say, you don't have to lie to me because I know everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't lie to my face.
Yeah.
Same thing in prayer. When we sit down to pray or kneel down to pray, let's say what's really in our hearts. Let's not try to pretend that God doesn't know what's really going on. If we're hating on somebody, and if we hated, let's just spell it out for God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That way he can work with us.
Yeah.
The more we keep lying to God, the more he's going to say, I can't work with you. Don't lie. Tell me the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sodom and Gomorrah. Why did God destroy them? I guess it's the big question of the chapter.
Well, they were exceedingly wicked, and there's a kind of an impression that they were like the people at the flood, right before the flood. Like, they had gotten so bad there that they were just like the people, before the flood.
Let's talk about Abraham's conversation with God before we get to the destruction, starting at verse 22. Anybody wants to read all the way maybe up to... Well, it's got to go all the way. The conversation goes down all the way down to 33. So maybe we should summarize.
Okay. Yeah, that's fine.
Abraham says, will you sweep away all the godly people with the wicked? You know, it's like our justice system in our hearts. We're like, well, everybody's going to die? What do you mean? Everybody died in the flood, and I'm sure they were not all wicked.
you know, a little child that was just born, you know, had no choice. You know, a little kid, 4 or 5 years old, had no choice. Then God says, you know, oh, then verse 25. What does your version say? What do you have? You have NIV?
Far be it from you to do such a thing, to kill the righteous with the wicked, treating the righteous and the wicked alike. Far be it from you. Will not the judge of all the earth do right?
What does your version say?
Surely wouldn't do such a thing, destroying the righteous along with the wicked. Why would he be treating the righteous and the wicked exactly the same? Surely he wouldn't do that. Should not the judge of all the earth do what is right?
Would you have the guts to say that to God?
Yeah. That's a difficult thing to say that to his face, certainly.
That's very intriguing to me that he does that and God plays along.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
To me, it's almost like if you were, you know, as friends, and I can see that maybe something that you're doing doesn't look right to me.
Mm-hmm.
As friends, mm-hmm. I feel like I can have the right to say to you, I say, are you really going to do that?
Mm-hmm.
As a Christian, you know, maybe you're going to look at me and say, who are you to question my inscrutable ways?
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe you can say that to me, but God didn't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
God accepted his question because he was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
We can see his concern for the righteous people
mm-hmm.
as the conversation is going along. And God is saying, again, condescending to his level, saying, if I find 50, I won't.
Mm-hmm.
If I find 35, I won't. If I find 20, I won't. You know, if I find 30, I won't. If I find 40, I won't. If I find 20, I won't. If I find 10, I won't do it.
Mm-hmm.
There were not even 10 righteous people
yeah.
in those two cities.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I found it amazing that Abraham has the liberty to speak like that to God,
mm-hmm.
and God does not hold it against him.
Mm-hmm.
God says, you're my friend.
Mm-hmm.
You can have that conversation with me. Say what's on your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You see?
Yeah.
And it might seem disrespectful to us, but it's almost like if I'm a friend and I'm concerned about your reputation too,
mm-hmm.
because you was concerned about what? Will not the judge of all the earth do what is right?
Mm-hmm.
In my conception, you're going to do something wrong if you kill the wicked and the just. Mm-hmm. But, so he was what? What was he concerned about? God's reputation.
Right.
Mm-hmm. God, I don't want you to look bad.
Mm-hmm.
See, and that's what Moses did. When he had the same thing, he said, I'm going to destroy all these people. Go away. I'm going to make you a great nation.
Mm-hmm.
And Moses says exactly the same thing almost.
Mm-hmm.
God, are you really going to do that? What are the wicked going to think
mm-hmm.
of you? I'm concerned about your reputation.
Mm-hmm.
I feel, my personal belief, that this is the main concern that the Christians should have today.
Mm-hmm.
Is a concern for God's reputation.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus was concerned for the Father's reputation. That's why he said, I have manifested your name, I made your name known to the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they taught you were a certain way, and I taught you were a different way. They told people that if you were a sinner, it was because you were condemned by God. I told them, I do not condemn you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
See? They were showing, Jesus was showing the rightness of God.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe that that's our purpose as well as Christians, to share to the world God's right reputation.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Well, I thought it was interesting that if I find X number of righteous people, I'll save the whole city.
Mm-hmm.
And God didn't say, I'll bring out the righteous.
Right,
and
right, right.
mm-hmm.
That's what he wound up doing.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
He did.
Daughters out. But.
And you know, how many were there? Four, Lot, his wife, four people.
Two daughters, yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Got down to four.
Yeah.
God said, at least if there's at least 10, I won't destroy it.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
about the Lot's daughter's fiancés
didn't go.
Refused to come.
Yeah. Right. So let's look at that story then. Chapter 19.
Aí quando os caras vieram ali que queriam abusar dele.
The two angels came to Sodom in the evening while Lot was sitting in the city. So maybe this is a clue to the three people that came talk to Abraham. Because the two, there were three.
Mm-hmm.
One of them, the Abraham bows down to,
mm-hmm.
pays him homage,
mm-hmm.
and says, Lord.
Right.
And then there's two more people. And then here in the conversation, it feels like those other two maybe were angels.
Because
it feels like they're the same people.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
No, that talked to Abraham. So that's maybe that's true. A clue that maybe God came down by himself
mm-hmm.
with a couple of angels instead of the whole Trinity coming down.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe Jesus Christ as God came
right.
down.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, they want to stay outside the city. And then they're like, no, 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 we're going to, you know, we're going to go to the town square, verse 2. They're like persistent. No, 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 come on in. And then they did. So what happens in verse 5?
They shouted to Lot, where are the men who came to spend the night with you, bringing them out so that we can have sex with them?
Has that ever happened in our society? Never seen that. Things are really bad.
Yeah.
You know? So what happens?
In prisons, I've said. That happens, but other than that, yeah.
Well, you're right. It's probably pretty bad.
If it's that bad, But prisons, it's interesting. I've heard, you know, they say the morality kind of reverses.
Yeah.
That the worse you are, the higher elevated you become to a certain degree. So
let's see if we can wrap it up in a few more minutes. They went outside, shut the door. So Lot went outside, shut the door. No, don't act so wickedly. And what does he say?
Here's my two daughters.
Would you ever say that? You know, it's again another picture of like how women were not considered, you know, equal at all. Like God said, you know, you're supposed to be a man's mate.
Mm-hmm.
That's not meant to be like you're inferior.
Yeah.
You're of a different, lower quality.
Mm-hmm.
And yet that's what these people start to think.
Yeah.
So they reached out, pulled Lot back into the house, shut the door. They struck the men that were at the door with what?
Blindness.
So all these people that are trying to invade the house grab these two men,
mm-hmm.
get, you know, blind,
mm-hmm.
and then they have a chance to flee.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the sons-in-law in verse 14 don't want to get out, started ridiculing them, my version says. What does yours say?
Thought he was joking.
And then how long did this last? Because when did they leave the city?
Dawn.
The next morning.
It took that long to get them out of the house.
Yeah.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah. Here's these two people warning them, get out, get out, you know, let's get out.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, they're like, you know, we got to leave without these brethren or these sons-in-law of yours.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just go. So what happens? They take them outside. We are too.
And Lot still hesitated. The angel seized his hands, the hand of his wife and daughters, and rushed them. So,
why did they hesitate so terribly? Wow, it must have been like a pretty big, interesting city or whatever, you know?
Yeah,
I think I would, if somebody told me, all right, I'm going to destroy this place, I wouldn't be hit.
And then what happens to his wife?
Turns into after looking back, turned into a pillar of salt.
What does the Bible say in chapter or verse 6 or 26?
Lot's wife looked back and she became a pillar of salt.
It just says look back?
Yeah.
Looked back.
Does yours say anything else?
It says, but Lot's wife looked back as she was following behind him, and she turned to a pillar of salt.
Does yours say differently?
19.
Verse 19, chapter
19. Oh, 19. 19. Yeah. Verse 26. Look back.
It just says, look back.
Yeah. Pillar of salt.
Mm. My version says, she looked back longingly.
Hmm.
Oh, okay. She looked back eagerly, intently. The Hebrew verb means to look intently, to gaze.
Hmm.
So here she looking back. Perhaps she's thinking, the home where I reared my children mm-hmm. is going to be destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
This city that I have so many good memories of, whatever they are.
Mm-hmm.
And she's intently looking at it like...
Right, you think about it.
Almost like, do I want to come back kind of a thing.
Well, you think about it. Lot had the same type of group as Abraham.
Mm-hmm.
Group of people, all the cattle, the sheep.
And everything is going to be gone.
Yeah.
And none of those guys came with him.
Yeah, right.
They all...
So she's obviously looking, you know, this is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, despite materialism... You know, I rear my children here, or, you know, like my family, and, like, think about it. You know, when you move to a different house after living there for a while,
mm-hmm.
you have a feeling, a sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
So, to a degree, she's just having,
mm-hmm.
you know, not necessarily second thoughts. She just wants to take a one look back.
Right.
But then the verb says intently, like she's gazing.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost like... Her desire is turning from
mm-hmm.
just trying to have a last memory
mm-hmm.
to maybe I want to stay.
But it almost sounds like
I don't want to put words in the Bible, but
it almost sounds like she stops. I mean, I don't know. Like while Lot and all the other people are moving on, she stops.
Yeah.
And looks back, and I kind of think it's kind of like as if a missile's coming towards Sodom and Gomorrah, and there's
mm-hmm.
I mean, there's no time. It's that time has passed. And
interesting thing here that it doesn't say that the Lord turned her into a pillar
mm-hmm.
of salt.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't say it was a punishment from God. It
mm-hmm.
just says that she turned to salt.
Pillar of salt.
Nobody knows. Maybe would it be the sulfur that could cause, you know, like a piece of sulfur that fell onto her as they were rushing out the door?
Yeah.
So the city is destroyed. And then Lot's daughters.
Yeah.
What did they do? Oh my gosh.
Get pregnant.
Yeah, they make his father, her father's, or their father drunk.
Mm-hmm.
Have sex with him.
Mm-hmm.
Have children by him.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny too that Lot says, you know, I don't want to go to the place where you want me to go. Did you realize that?
Yeah.
God, I don't want to go there.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just live here in this cave, this area here.
Mm-hmm.
That looks pretty good.
Yeah.
God still condescends, even there. Do you
mm-hmm.
see how incredible, how incredibly gracious God is being?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He waits all night long before he destroys the city.
Mm-hmm.
He tries to grab everybody from his household.
Yeah.
He says to everybody, don't turn back.
Mm-hmm.
He says, let's go up to the mountains.
Mm-hmm.
No, let me stay in the cave. Fine.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
Now, in verse 20 it says, look, here's a town near enough to run to, and it is small. Let me flee to it. It's very small, isn't it? Then my life will be spared.
All the arguments that we sometimes have with God. God, can I have this, please? Just this once. It's almost like we're talking to our parents as little children.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we got to wrap up. Everybody's done.
Yeah.
Chapter 20. I don't know if we want to skip that or...
Well, we kind of talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah, with Abraham.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So what's the big takeaway from these 10 chapters in your mind? My big takeaway is despite the destruction...
of Sodom and Gomorrah, I see the incredible graciousness of God and the warning.
Mm-hmm.
See, things are terrible. They don't listen to me. They don't want me anyways.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to read eventually when we get to Romans. Chapter 1 of Romans says that God gave them up to the lusts of their hearts, to the, you know, every evil desire that they had conceived.
Mm-hmm.
God gave them up. That's the wrath of God.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The wrath of God was poured out in Sodom and Gomorrah here.
Mm-hmm.
Because it says that the eternal fire is the same fire that rained down in Sodom and Gomorrah.
Mm-hmm.
The fire of the wrath of God. And yet the wrath of God is the consequences of you living your own rebellious choice.
Mm-hmm.
You give me no other choice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like I've given you as many, you know, he says, doesn't he say before when they go to Canaan,
mm-hmm.
that the Israelites, when he makes the promise to Abraham,
mm-hmm.
the Israelites are going to go to Canaan only 400 years after they get their captive by this nation. Remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because what? The iniquity of the people that live there has not reached its full yet.
Its full measure, yeah.
So God is still waits for that iniquity level to rise up
mm-hmm.
before he has to commit these acts of destruction that we see in the Old Testament. That's the more gracious thing that I see.
Yeah.